that manhole which over there, we get the right-hand manhole over there. What the? I have a tough time once in a while. Our future constitution. In World War II, he called that Alaska Territory Guard. I worked with together William Egan. That's a good point. Right now on that, I've got to tell you the truth, everybody on that, young ones, well, let's work together. Adam Jalisford Knaptovich, well, let's work together. I'm not a good man anymore. I won't lie like this all the time. I like to work with Willie Pashine and Sam George. I like to work with them together. Uyan!
Well, thank you, sir. And I remember the hospitality you extended to us when Mr. Case and I were in Akiachuk, and I want to thank you again for that. Where was I? Mary Miller,
what I was going to say would have been a very good way to begin this day, because some of the frustrations I was feeling are starting to be addressed and set aside. What I was going to say was that the last hour of discussion yesterday left me very, very frustrated, because I feel like the last hour of yesterday, we really weren't doing justice to the real potential of tribal governments in Alaska. The closest thing we came to yesterday was the brief comments that about what we can accomplish through tribal legislation that Mr. Pipestem alluded to very briefly. The rest of the time we tap danced around this entire topic, and I don't like to dance, much less tap dance. One thing that I was wishing, and again, some of the frustrations and concerns I was feeling very deeply yesterday at the end of the day are being addressed now. But one thing I was wishing was that all of the Alaska Native population could be sitting in this room with us, completely surrounding us, because I felt like there were a lot of words thrown back and forth. Sometimes, and most oftentimes, I think with good intention, but often without any conscious realization that you're talking about very real people here. I believe that we are finally speaking with some vision today, where we lacked it yesterday. Hopefully that we are going to continue to have vision in the words that we talk about today. Because I believe that the range of options available to us through the tribal governments addresses the matter of our hearts, which is a very strong desire to realize a maximum permanent protection of our land base, maximum political control in our communities, and the protection of our subsistence lifestyle, and overall, the preservation of our very identity. One option that we have not yet addressed in any great length, which I hope we will today, is the prospect of placing our ANCSA lands in trust for our membership through our tribal governments, creating our own trust. This is forging new ground in Alaska, but I believe that the whole intent of this very roundtable, these 4 days, is to allow ourselves to dream about new possibilities. I listened to every testimony that was given in our region. The elders spoke about traditional governments and how they want to see the IRA protect their lands. Through the expression of their hearts, they are providing direction to us, those of us who are involved in planning for our future through discussions such as this. Our people are depending on this commission. They will watch it closely and have faith that the findings and recommendations of the commission will help them realize their dream of survival. Finally, I would like to state for the record, Judge Berger, that our people collectively and I personally have a great deal of respect for you. You have a great capacity to hear and understand us. And at this moment and throughout the life of this commission, I believe that the recommendations and findings will be stated in terms of what is in the best interest of the Alaska Native people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Well, Reed, I thought you had your hand up.
I guess you asked a question that I had in mind, really. David and I had been conversing for this for some hours this morning before he spoke, and I guess what I'm not convinced of is that you have to completely unscramble the ANCSA corporations. I think that there are two issues that are involved here, and I guess I don't know whether this is the group that should discuss them, because we don't really, any of the lawyers here, I don't believe, have the expertise to figure out how to take over corporations or devise a complicated merger and acquisition strategies or that kind of thing. That's not what we do. But I think there really is no question in my mind, after hearing these 4 days of testimony that you've had, and you summarize the concerns that you've heard as you've gone to 52 villages, that you've simply got to devise a way, you, the commission, the Native people of Alaska, and together with them, the state of Alaska, the non-Native citizens here, and the Congress of the United States, because I think that is where it's ultimately going to go. Simply have to devise a way to revitalize the tribal governmental structures, or to maybe it's not revitalize them, just make people aware of the structures that are there. That it's going to be impossible, in my judgment, for the Native people of Alaska to control subsistence, to control their land, and to control their destiny without strong tribal governmental structures. There just can't be any question about that. The question gets raised as to whether those structures work in other places. The answer is, I think, that in the 15 years that I've been practicing law, representing tribes in the lower 48 and working with them, first with the Native American Rights Fund when David was the director of it, secondly, when I was the chief Indian lawyer at the Interior Department, and for the last 8 years in private practice, I think there's been tremendous strides made by Native governments in the lower 48, the kind of strides that Browning's talked about with the Sac and Fox, the kind of strides that Larry Ashenbrenner talked about with the Navajo, or that I mentioned with Fort Peck. I mean, that these governments are much stronger and more vital and successful today, and to the extent that they're not, they're trying. And that there is simply no alternative, I suggest, for the Native people of Alaska or for the people anywhere in the world, but to try to govern themselves. That's a moral imperative. That's a social imperative. The fact, for example, that it's not working very well as far as we can see in Iran right now doesn't mean that the government of Iran should be toppled and, you know, some other power should come in there and govern Iran. That's simply not an option in the 20th century. And similarly, it's not an option here in Alaska or any place else, that the structures have to be set up so that people can do that. And I think I happen to believe that the structures are there. I think that the jurisdiction in my mind, does extend as a matter of law to any land that's now owned by a regional or a village corporation, by a corporation of native people, that's within the area of a village government. I mean, I think ANCSA did nothing to abolish village governments. Village governments are, as Dave Case has so ably pointed out in his books and his articles, village governments are the traditional governing structure in Alaska. They are the Alaska equivalent of the Navajo tribe and the Sac and Fox tribe and the Assiniboine and Sioux tribes at Fort Peck. And they are the entities that hold that sovereignty. It's never been extinguished, and you have it. You've got to exercise it. And I think, just like you don't need a reservation to do that, I think an Indian tribe in the lower 48 has jurisdiction over allotted land on its reservation, or land owned in fee by an Indian housing authority on its reservation. Or even if there's not a reservation, and there isn't one at Lake Traverse in South Dakota, the courts have still held that an Indian tribe has jurisdiction as a government over Indian-owned land that's used for Indian purposes. That's a dependent Indian community. I don't think you necessarily need to retransfer ANCSA lands to village corporations to have that, or to village governments to have that. Now, the thing I do have some doubt about, and I guess here I'm truthfully not, I'm much more uncertain about it than I was 4 days ago. I've really listened to all of you as you've talked to Charlie, to Spud, to Willie and Sam when he was here yesterday, to Sheldon a great deal. I mean, he's been talking for 4 days to Byron, who unfortunately isn't here today. I'm much less certain whether you need to take upon yourselves as tribal governments the necessity to own this land as tribal lands. That on the Fort Peck Reservation, which I represent, on the lower 48.
What state is that?
That's in Montana, Tom. It's up in the northern border of Montana. I'm sure it's colder there this morning than it has been here this week. That it's right up there on the Missouri River, between the Missouri River and the Canadian border, near Poplar, Montana, is the capital of that reservation. Most of the land on that reservation is not owned by the Fort Peck tribe. Some is. And increasingly over the years, the tribe has been acquiring land on the reservation, but most of the land is owned either by non-Indians who've come on there to live, or is owned by Indians in individual trust status as allotments. But there's no question that if you've got a construction company or a store that's owned by Indians on the reservation, or an Indian allottee who wants to do some oil and gas drilling on the reservation, that the tribe as a government has authority over him or her. And so that there's really, in my mind, I have an uneasy suspicion that by also putting on yourselves the burden of unscrambling this omelet that Tom was talking about, this ANCSA omelet of corporations, regional corporations, village corporations, and trying to get that unscrambled, it's not going to be a simple process. It's not one that I'm not confident that you can do it. Although I haven't messed much with corporate law in my practice. I studied it a little bit in law school, but I have some sense that there are some dissenters' rights that I think Congress could overrule them. I think Congress, in the exercise of its plenary power, could overrule a dissenter's rights, or could pay people off if they didn't want to sell. I think there's no problem if all the stockholders in a village got together and said, "Look, we want to transfer this now to the village government." I don't think there's much question they could do that. I guess there's a little bit of question as to whether that would be a corporate waste or something. But I think that's not the problem. Where you have a voluntary, unanimous, consensus decision, I think you can almost surely implement that in your villages. But I have real doubt that you can implement it, as against stockholders living in distant places, in Phoenix, Los Angeles, God save us if there's some in Finland. I mean, you know, you'd be tied up in the courts with shareholders' derivative suits for a long time. And you've got to ask yourself, I think, whether it's worth doing that. I feel, as David said, and I guess David was reflecting some discussions we had this morning on this, I don't think, in my experience with tribal governments in the lower 48, that governments are very good at running businesses. I think that there are a few exceptions, but I think that, and you know, I mean, I told you that the tribe I represent owns the largest corporate employer in Montana. In the private sphere, But the way they manage it is that they have a long-term irrevocable management contract with an outside firm that comes in and does it. And the tribal governing body can't get in the middle of employment decisions, can't get in the middle of business decisions. The manager does that, and it does employ Indians. There's an Indian preference clause in the agreement, so there's no question about Indians being employed. But the question about which Indian gets employed or who gets laid off or that kind of thing, that's a business decision. I think governing bodies are simply too political to make those kinds of decisions effectively. I would not, if it were 1970 and I were advising you, I wouldn't dream of advising anyone to set up ANCSA the way it was set up. I mean, I think it was set up to create the problems that we see today. I mean, it was set up, there's a tremendous fragmentation of power in ANCSA. I mean, you have 12 regional corporations, not three or seven. You have 208 village corporations. You have stockholders all over the place. I mean, I don't mean to attribute to Congress malice. I don't have any evidence to say that it was malicious, but it certainly worked out as a divide and conquer strategy. And what you've got now is you've got people who will resist with a knife between their teeth. You're doing anything to mess with their shares. And because they don't live in your village, you've got the whole non-resident problem that the Allotment Act set up to pulverize Indian tribes in the lower 48. But the thing to remember is that lower 48 Indian tribes survived the Allotment Act. It was almost 100 years ago, and they're still there, those tribes. And you will still be here 100 years from now, whether you have ANCSA corporations or not, because you're strong and you're vital. If you exercise your governmental powers over these corporations, you will be here. And you can do that without taking upon yourself the massive, complicated mess of, it'll cost $50 million in legal fees if you can find lawyers to unscramble the ANCSA mess.
You can find the lawyers. I'm sure they can find the lawyers.
Yeah, they'll be lining up for you. They won't be us. We don't know how to do that. But there'll be others. that's right. But I mean, I think that just like the Fort Peck tribe and the Sac. I mean, I don't know what you're. I mean, I know you have allotments out there at Sac and Fox. There's a strong, thriving tribe in Oklahoma that's overcome that problem. It's not such a problem that you can't overcome it. And I think you might be better off, I'm not sure about this, but I think you might be better off not trying to take on all of the hocus pocus of corporate law and jargon. And the better way to take it on is to organize your government, start exercising this authority. If you got to go to Congress, go to Congress to get it confirmed, but I think you've got it. And do some fairly simple things with ANCSA. I think there are two very simple things you could do with ANCSA that would work, that wouldn't get all the people with the knives between their teeth taking you on, that wouldn't get the divisiveness in your communities between stockholders and subsistence village people that you may otherwise have. One thing is to extend forever the restriction on alienation of the ANCSA shares. I mean, there's precedent for doing that in the Allotment Acts. There are, 28, well, maybe there's six Supreme Court cases, right? I mean, six Supreme Court cases saying Congress can do that, no constitutional problem with doing that. And you just extend that forever. And the second thing you should give some thought to doing is refunding ANCSA. I don't mean with your own pockets. I mean you should go to Congress and you should go to the state and you should say that ANCSA was too little, it did create this afterborn shareholder problem, that there should be a permanent funding mechanism to make sure that you don't get into this situation where your children and your grandchildren don't own stock until heaven forbid you die. Nobody wants that kind of system. And I think you can make a case for that. I think you can make a pretty strong case for it. I think you can go to Congress and to the state, and you can say, look, there are enormous mineral leasing revenues up here in this state. Right now, the state gets what? David and Charles would know more than I, being the experts in public land law, but something like 90%? 90% of the revenues from leasing of the public lands in Alaska. They're enormous. I mean, what if the state got 88%? And instead of getting 10%, the federal government got 8% and each ponied up 2% for a permanent sinking fund for ANCSA that could be used if village corporations wanted to use it to retire their stock. I think they could devise that. If you wanted to use it to set up that fund so that more money got put into the corporations, or that each native when he or she became 18 got a comparable piece of stock as he became 18 or something like that, that it could be done. That's where I'd put the imagination, and I'd make a powerful case to Congress that they thought they gave you a lot of money, huh? $1 billion for 80,000 natives. Well, that's not much money. That's not much money. I mean, forget what you gave up for it. It probably isn't enough money for what you gave up, but it's certainly not much money if the objective of ANCSA was economic self-sufficiency for the native community in Alaska. Because, I mean, quite clearly, by all the measurements, I've read the 1985 draft study that the Interior Department commissioned. By all the social and economic measurements, you've done better over the last 12 years, but there are still substantial disparities between Native groups and non-Native groups in this state. And that if the objective is to bring Native people over a generation or some period like that up to the standard health-wise and job-wise, that non-natives in this state have, more has to be done. Inflation came with ANCSA. Terrible legal costs came with ANCSA, and it was Congress's fault because Congress drew up a settlement that didn't have precision to it, that was ambiguous. Mostly Congress set up a settlement where you fought among yourselves. I'll bet if you took those $50 million someone's talking about on legal costs, why, most of them were spent by such and such regional corporation suing another regional corporation. An awful lot of it was spent that way. And that's inevitable. I mean, that's quite proper corporate activity if you're dealing in a situation where Congress has set up different entities to go at each other. It disrupts the kind of unity that this gentleman in the back spoke of so eloquently. You've got to get that unity back, and you've got to stop letting Congress fund something that's going to put you at each other's throats. And I think, again, some kind of permanent sinking fund, a case can be made for that. It ought to be taken to Congress. It ought to be taken soon. You ought to get to the state and try to get them to pony some of it up. And that's the way to go after ANCSA, I think, rather than trying to devise complicated situations that will enmesh you. I promise you will enmesh you in fruitless and hopeless and protracted and complicated legal battles until what Spud was saying, the lady coming up to him and saying, "Spud, what's an IRA?" And he says, "Well, it's just your traditional village government." She says, "Oh, I understand." God save him if somebody's got to come up and say, "Spud, you know, what's a Section 23 class action derivative suit," and so on, yakety yak. I mean, I don't know what that is, and I went to law school. So I think it's... I think there's a whole other route to take here, but I think the most important route to take is the route of that some of you are now taking of organizing your village structures. I think that deserves every possible support. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Reed. We're going to stop for coffee in a minute, but Bob Blodgett, who's a longtime resident of Alaska, asked if he could say a few words. So we'll give you the last word before coffee, Mr. Blodgett, if you'd like to move up and take Charlie's microphone and, in fact, keep it for the rest of the...
I was going to eat it later.
Go ahead,
Thank
sir.
You, Judge Berger, members of the board, and guests. My thoughts are as scattered as a bunch of clay pigeons in a shooting gallery as I hear you people air your concerns and your philosophies in dealing with the many faceted problems that confront us as a people, we, all of the people, that are incumbent in this real estate. It's a many-faceted figure, like a dodecahedron, the problems. They shine as the problem comes to light, and then moves around and out of sight, out of mind. With the advent of statehood, the Northwest Senate District J, was yielding less than $1 million per year in revenues into the state treasury of Alaska. Today, Senate District J is yielding between 85 and 90% of the revenues of the state, and I strongly suspect that with the development of small oil fields that exist on the North Slope that were discovered by Arctic contractors in the exploration of Navy Petroleum Reserve IV, there will be substantial network of gathering lines from those marginal fields. That oil will be fed on into the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, so we can expect revenues to continue, not at the level they do now as a result of state lands, because those are federal lands and many of those lands are native lands. Now the in 1979, I was caught up in a struggle as a member of the legislature and therefore my constituents in the unorganized borough. I was there, in essence, their borough assemblyman, because the legislature is to function as the borough assembly for the unorganized borough. One of my constituents, Lucy Avakana, owned a trading post at Beachy Point, just east of the mouth of the Kaporik River. And that was overrun by Atlantic Richfield companies, tractors and sleds and heavy equipment. And the site was virtually destroyed, including the graveyard of the family that had been there for generations. And an Anchorage attorney, Cliff Groh, was representing Atlantic Richfield, and I was seeking to get justice done for Lucy Avakana. And it was very frustrating because the State Department of Community and Regional Affairs was a local government committee in the legislature, and the state was poorly funded budget-wise to deal with matters of this nature. And when the September 9, 1979 Prudhoe Bay North Slope oil lease sale was conducted, I read the writing on the wall and I realized that there must be borough government on the North Slope, and it must come to pass immediately. So I met with Lloyd and Lucy Avakana here in Anchorage in their home, and we spent several hours going over it, and we called Eben Hobson. And we talked for a couple more hours, all on my nickel, on my legislative pay. And Eben realized what was coming down the pike and how this tremendous development would be overrunning the land and the people. And the North Slope Borough came to pass. I'm very thankful for that. Now then, I feel that I'm somewhat frustrated in all the rhetoric about tribal government, and I can understand why people would now be embracing this philosophy, because the State Department of Community and Regional Affairs in the state of Alaska has failed miserably to aid and abet the people in the communities in our state that are not as sophisticated as yet, but are becoming more sophisticated in administering local home rule government. One of the problems we experience in the local home rule government area, and the second class cities don't have any patent on that, People run and they elect to serve on the city councils. They want the title, but they don't want to go to the meeting, or they go to the meeting to draw $50 per diem and then leave early, or just sit there and don't contribute. And then when other council members are aggressive and push for in dealing with matters of local home rule government, those people that are aggressive then are criticized. We have yesterday, a gentleman alluded to the fact that there were 28 positions available in the community of Teller, and only 10 people to fill those positions. Well, the fact of the matter is, I think most of us in this room that live in the bush realize that there are people that are doers and there are people that are not doers. And there are people that like to have...
You're from Teller, I believe.
Yes, sir. only for 29 years.
Well, then, well.
It was Benjamin Franklin that said, guests are like fish. After 3 days, they begin to smell. I am a guest of the people of native origin of Alaska because of my interpretation of the act of cession and the purchase of trading rights by the United States from Russia. The United States really didn't purchase the land, not at all. And too few people that deal with decisions affecting us and our people are not familiar with the Treaty of Cession, the Alaska Purchase. It needs to be studied in depth, and the native leaders of this state have a very real responsibility to their people that they serve and represent to read that and study it and become scholars of it in depth. But what I was about to say is I've been a guest for 29 years. I have not always been a good guest, and I apologize. I've tried. I mean to be a good guest. Now, what has prompted me to come before you people now is the fact that I didn't support the Native Land Claim Settlement Act personally. I supported it because that's what my constituency wanted. And I stated that the Native Land Claim Settlement Act would come home to haunt our people and our leaders that were beating the drums for the passage of it. I didn't have a crystal ball, but I'd read as much material as I get my hands on to try and develop a workable understanding of it as best as I could. And it created a caste system. And now my grandchildren are of Native origin, spelled with a small N. They're low caste natives in every sense of the word. I'm not proud of that. And I'm not proud that the native leadership would permit a caste system to be foisted on them or any other native person of native origin. Since December 71. This must be dealt with very decisively, very fairly. I'm hopeful that my grandchildren will become students, scholars of the Native Land Claim Settlement Act, and they will someday be vociferous, hardworking leaders for justice. Because the Native Land Claim Settlement Act has created this caste system. It's a very real injustice. My daughter-in-law was an orphan. She was raised by her grandparents, who had 12 children, and those 12 children have brought 144 children onto this earth, and the distribution of stock in the corporations, nebulous. So there, I have to go back to the drawing board like engineers do when they do it wrong. Go back and do it over, whatever it takes. Now one of our big stumbling blocks with our city council, with our village corporations, our regional corporations, our coastal zone boards, our school boards, one of the biggest problems that haunt us is liquor and drugs. People serve and wear these hats and have these titles. They're supposed to represent our people in these different capacities. And they can't make it past the bars, or they get their per diem and cop out, and they're not at the meeting. Now this is a very rampant, very serious thing. We must not bury our heads in the sand and overlook it. We have a responsibility, the people have a responsibility to guarantee that the people that they delegate to represent them will be responsible people that will tend to business. Now one of the other problems that we're confronted with is when we get good people that produce and tend to business, they get overloaded. Or let Joe do it. Joe can do it. And pretty soon Joe's doing so many things that his spirit's broken. He's overloaded. It's like overloading a truck or putting too much load on a dog sled. And the team is worn out, lie down, give up. Responsibility. Now, in the early culture, the true subsistence culture, the Aboriginal people of Alaska were workaholics. They had to work to survive. In southeastern Alaska and the Prince William Sound region, when the tide was out, the table was set. In the Arctic, there is an ice cap over the land 5 months of the year. And it takes tremendous discipline to get out there and do your thing for survival. They did it. In our community now, we used to have families that were subsistence lifestyle families, and as soon as the youngsters got out of the mandatory school attendance, off to fish camp all summer. All summer long, you'll see the youngsters or the family. Maybe they come in for coffee or tea or salt or some fish hooks. Now we might have three families in our community, the 65 families, that pursue the subsistence lifestyle. Our people are not workaholics. The fireside industry of the native art and craft has dwindled. I, as the author of the Native Art and Craft Labeling Act, I'm very proud of that. But it's been infringed upon through the Alaska Council of the Arts by another label and watered it down somewhat, and it's been abused. The advent of the Marine Mammal Protection Act made a substantial contribution in destroying the local fireside art and craft industry in our communities. I could spend a, take up your time and put a whole day into that one. Now the subsurface rights on these lands, I believe, rightfully belong to the village corporation. I take issue with the fact that the regional corporation owns the subsurface rights. Now we've had our good people milked off by the regional corporations and different state and federal agencies. Now they're more coming in, the National Park Service and all those people creaming our better qualified, more productive people out of our communities were stripped. It's kind of like a bones on of a Thanksgiving turkey. We're just polished clean. Now the state of Alaska has a very real responsibility to all of the communities in Alaska to strengthen the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and get with it, get down to business, get to work, declare war on weak local home rule governments. And I feel that the Stanton Ketchetag, or Sheldon Stanton's son, are on the right track. I believe it came about because of the fact that the state Department of Community Regional Affairs hasn't really gotten with it in a local home rule government. I believe that that's the fundamental reason why the tribal government's been born. It's another layer of government. And I submit that the best government is the least government. There'll be conflicts between municipalities and the tribal governments. The problem has to be solved. It must be done and now at the round table. It can't be done in streets by yelling at each other. It has to be done at the round table. Negotiation. My remarks are somewhat scattered. I hope that what I have had to say will help, will contribute somewhat, new people in your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blodgett. We'll take a break for coffee now.
Needless to say, we'd be delighted to do that. I